Public radio is here for you. It doesn't matter how old you are, how big your home is, or what kind of car you drive. WOSU and NPR connect you to news and information in civil conversations. That's why 43 million Americans listen to NPR each week. WOSU is part of our community, covering and discussing issues important to you, standing with the facts. Meet the moment with WOSU. Go to WOSU.org/protect. This podcast was recorded Thursday, June 12th at 10:34 a.m. Things may have changed by the time you hear this. Yeah, like President Trump and Elon Musk will break up and make up as often as Ben Affleck and Jennifer Lopez have. We do have Bennifer. Maybe now we'll have Donilon. Let's talk politics. This is Snollygoster, WOSU Public Media's weekly look at Ohio politics and all those Snollygosters, those shrewd politicians who are ready to capitalize on high-profile events and controversial decisions. Yes, we're looking at you, California Governor Gavin Newsom. I'm Mike Thompson. Coming up in the podcast, National Guard troops versus protesters. What could go wrong? Well, Ohioans know. But first, the third version of the state budget is out, and it proposes cutting taxes for any Ohioan making more than $100,000 a year. The state Senate would do that by flattening the state income tax. If approved by the legislature, Ohio's income tax rate would be 2.75% for everyone. Now, taxpayers who earn $100,000 or more, now they pay 3.5%. So if this gets through the House Senate Conference Committee and the governor signs it, upper-income Ohioans would see a 21% tax cut. Supporters say a flat tax will make Ohio more attractive to businesses and boost the economy. Opponents say it's a payoff for the wealthy. To break down the pros and cons of this flat tax plan, we turn to this week's panel of experts, Ohio State political scientist Herb Asher, Republican strategist Mike Gonadakis, and State House reporter Andrew Tobias of Signal Statewide. Andrew Tobias, this has been talked about before, flattening the income tax in Ohio. What is the thinking at the State House on the chances of this getting through this time?
I think the chances are pretty good. It'll be interesting to see if stuff like tax collection data coming in, there's the federal budget might make some cuts to Medicaid. That maybe that will change the fiscal picture for the state, but absent something that really makes the numbers not add up, this has been a long-term policy priority for Republicans. As long as I've been covering the State House, it's something that they've wanted to do. It's also something that Vivek Ramaswamy wants to do if he's elected governor next year. So I just think it's very much in line with what Republicans want to do, and they made the numbers add up. And so as long as that remains the case, I think that's what's going to happen.
Why was this not in the House budget if it's a priority for Republicans? Did they leave it for the Senate? Was it politics in the process? At last minute, you throw this out there?
I'm not a budget whiz. Yeah. I know that when Matt Huffman was asked about this, his concern was that in order to find the money for the tax cut, you have to eliminate a tax exemption for businesses. That's something that Republicans have looked at in the past, and it's always survived. So maybe just they had a different idea of how to make the numbers add up.
$1 billion, Herb. Can the state afford it?
Of course it can. I mean, the question becomes, what are other sources of income? What are other projections of future growth and revenue? What's going to happen with the federal government? And presumably, they say if the Medicaid budget goes below 90%, they're going to then cut off people who are on the Medicaid expansion. You want to cut them off at the same time that you're doing a tax break for the wealthy? Well, they may say yes. We can live with both. And this is really sort of mirroring what's happening at the national level. So I think you'll be seeing here that the tax system, both in the United States and in Ohio, will be having more benefits, relatively speaking, for those who are most wealthy.
Yeah, I would respectfully challenge that talking point that it's a tax cut for the wealthy. Look, for the longest time, anyone making $26,000 or less pays zero income tax. I'm willing to bet everyone around this table makes more than $26,000 a year, whether it be retirement income or income with our jobs, and no one's ever mistaken us to be Les Wexner, okay? So this is working class people making $30,000, $40,000, $50,000, $60,000 or more, of course, or more, because there's no ceiling. So at the end of the day, this helps a vast majority of Ohioans, single moms, working-class families, too. It's a good thing.
The median income in Ohio is $38,000, $39,000. So right now, they're paying 2.75.
they're not going to see a tax cut. But if you're making $100,000 or $200,000 or $300,000, you will see the tax cut. So how does it help the working class people who are making, you know, on average, $40,000 a year?
Okay, or $50,000 or $60,000, yeah. And it goes up. So look, we have to look at it not just at the millionaires, but the people that a family making $100,000 in Ohio, they're probably not doing that great. Let's face it, unfortunately, the inflation where we're at in Columbus, it's expensive to live here.
Slightly more than the median income for a household, which is $70,000.
Yeah, yeah. So if a family making $70,000, Mike, they're going to see benefit from this, but it's relative on what they currently pay. If you're a wealthy person, you pay a lot more. If you don't have access to those means, you pay less, but you're still going to pay less. Look, at the end of the day, we complain about brain drain. We complain about people leaving the state. Where are they going? They're going to states with lower taxes, like Florida. They have zero income tax, and other southern states that have zero income tax. Yeah, we got to compete.
Many times at the state and the national level, we claim that tax cuts benefit everybody, and in many cases, they do. But you have to ask the question, who benefits more? Where is the greatest share of the benefit going to? And that's a reasonable question.
Yeah, well, here's the numbers. I hate to throw numbers because it's hard to follow. But someone making $200,000 a year right now, if this passes, would save $1,500 a year in taxes. Not a tiny amount, but it's pretty small. Someone making $1 million will save $7,500 a year in taxes. Andrew, Ohio has cut taxes for 20 years, shrunk the number of tax brackets for 20 years, and our economy is still kind of, meh. So that's what they're saying is going to help the economy here now.
You know, that's the argument that Republicans have been making for a long time. I know when Mike DeWine first became governor in 2018, he'd felt the taxes have been cut enough, but we kind of see Republicans continue to tax them year after year. So I know they make the argument that if taxes are too high and out of step with surrounding states, that it can be a competitive disadvantage. But, you know, Republicans still point to, like Mike said, places like Texas and Florida where there's zero income tax at all.
Is there a symbolic effect of this, Herb? If Florida has no income tax, Texas has no income tax, if Ohio joins them, yeah. Even though it's not a whole lot of money to individuals, perhaps.
Sure, it becomes a selling point for Ohio. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But again, this is always argued that cut taxes, and in fact, your economy will expand, and you know that leaves aside the question of the other side. What about the quality of the services that you're providing in your state? Isn't that important for business location and relocation or whatever? And I think it's always been the case that Republicans would like to use the argument that tax cuts build the economy. Democrats will use the argument it's unfair depending on how you do the tax cuts.
How about instead of tax cuts, putting more money into the education system? Because we're, you know, in the, again, kind of meh when it comes to education rankings, Mike, and things like that.
Senate,
to attract companies to Ohio.
Yeah, you know, great question. I think it's a very fair question. Senate President Rob McCauley and Jerry Serino, the finance chair, said at their press conference this week that they're including an additional $636 million for schools across the state. That's on top of the $1 billion we gave in the last budget. So we're up to $1.6 billion for public education from the State House outside of what they're getting at their local levy. So they're being funded.
When do we take that this passes and it's flat 2.75, Andrew, when does the effort come to lower that even more and even eliminate the income tax? Is that Vivek Ramaswamy if he becomes governor? Is that what that's going to be?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's an inevitability that Ohio Republicans will try to cut the income tax every chance they get. So I would just look for it to happen in the next budget cycle, to be honest.
Yeah. We're in relatively good economic times nationally, Herb. What happens when a recession hits?
Well, then we have to decide what to do with our various rainy day funds. Yeah. Look, I agree, they're going to try to cut the income tax further in the future. But what about the entire discussion right now about property taxes? And that, to me, is a more serious discussion. I'm glad they're talking about it because there's an effort afoot, as you know, to, in fact, have a constitutional amendment that will basically abolish the property tax, which will be devastating, particularly for our suburban school districts. And so, in fact, it's not likely to make the ballot this year. It's so difficult to get the signatures. But what if it makes the ballot in 2026? And what if, in fact, Vivek Ramaswamy, who earlier on made a very careless statement about abolishing the property tax and the income tax, what if it gets on the ballot and nobody's willing to oppose it? Or the only people opposing it are some Democrats who are saying it'll destroy the state, but in fact the Republicans are, you know, somehow are trapped in this. Yeah. That'll be a disaster.
One person's disaster is another's victory. If it makes the ballot, this property tax elimination campaign will be incredible to watch. When we come back, our panel discusses using billions of dollars in unclaimed funds to help build sports stadiums and cultural venues.
Planet Money helps you understand the economy. We find the people at the center of the story.
Garbage in New York, that was like a controlled substance.
We show you how money influences everything.
Tell me what you like by telling me how you spend your money.
And we dig until we get answers.
I had a bad feeling you're going to bring that up.
Planet Money finds out. All you have to do is listen. The Planet Money podcast from NPR.
Well, it did come as a surprise to many this week when we learned the state has nearly $4 billion in unclaimed money. That's money Ohioans have forgotten about. Money in old inactive bank accounts, forgotten security deposits, uncashed paychecks. It's a lot of money, and it's just sitting there waiting to be claimed. Well, now the state Senate wants to give some of it to the Cleveland Browns to help pay for a new dome stadium. The Senate plan would take about a third of the unclaimed funds and put it into an account for sport and cultural projects. This is the latest plan to help the Browns build a dome stadium just outside of Cleveland. Governor DeWine, he wants to tax sports betting companies to pay for the stadium or help pay for it. The House suggests borrowing $600 million to help pay for the stadium. Andrew Tobias, I suggest that if this plan works, we name it the Unclaimed Funds Dome in Cleveland. Did you know this money was there? $4 billion.
So I'm aware of this fund. I'm a former small town newspaper reporter, and I've certainly been in the position where I'm like, what am I going to write about today? And the state has issued press releases about these things, reminding people to get your money. I've looked at it in the past. I've found a couple $100 from my grandparents, that kind of thing. Yeah. I didn't know there's $4 or $5 billion in this account. That came as a surprise to me. And it's creative, if nothing else, for public officials to think about, hey, this money's sitting here. We could probably make more use out of it. But of course, it also raises the question about whether this is going to be solvent for people who someday claim the money again. I mean, there's questions about, I think currently they hold it onto it in perpetuity, and this would kind of set a 10-year limit for people to get it. So there's certainly questions about what's fair with what to do with it. But it is the government. They have billions of dollars just sitting around. It makes sense that they try to figure out that they could get something out of it.
Herb, I'm amazed the unclaimed funds website did not crash this week when people heard about this. Because I looked, I checked. I don't have anything. My daughter has $25 waiting for.
I think it's a very creative idea. And again, it's a solution that is not just about the Brown Stadium. It also, you know, two-thirds of the money they're talking about would go to other projects or whatever. And I think they were really talking about it, trying to phase it in such a way that the first dollars going out are the dollars that have been unclaimed for the longest period of time, so that if you and I have some unclaimed funds and they're relatively recent, we'll still be able to get them. But, you know, at some point that money runs out. But what they're talking about here is a one-time expenditure. So, in fact, it's not an ongoing kind of expenditure. And actually, I think it's a better idea than doing bonding. Bonding, you're taking on more debt, and you're paying off the debt and out of the general revenue fund. So this is really kind of interesting. And Mike DeWine's tax increases, it had TI, tax increase. Oops, yeah. I'm not sure that'll fly.
Mike, $4 billion, that could fund a lot of road construction projects, drug treatment programs, high-speed rail. Why should it go to the sports?
Because we have an immediate need in front of us. And again, it's sports.
Immediate
we
think need for a dome stadium.
Yeah, well, because it's an economic development, Mike. Tell me the last time Brook Park, Ohio had anything going for it, or most of Cuyahoga County going for it. So this is not just bringing a stadium. It's bringing hotels, bars, restaurants, condos, housing, office. So it's a huge complex. I've been to the Dallas Cowboys Stadium. It's a multi-acre complex with a lot going on. So it's going to raise a lot of revenue, too. But, you know, at the end of the day, as Professor said, it doesn't dip into bonds and interest payments and our general revenue fund having to go pay that back. It's awesome. And the state said, look, we're even going to do $2 million in a public service campaign. Go check this website. Click here. If it's your money, take it. Go for it. So what they're not trying to just swipe it out from under people's feet. They're saying, hey, go get it, and we're going to start using this if you don't.
So, but the Browns owner's a billionaire. Mm-hmm. It's economic development, but why can't private industry? And there's also a question whether it really does benefit the economy. Yeah. Yeah. There are many studies that say it doesn't.
It will, because they're not just building a stadium. They're building all the other
things.
Even
those projects they say don't
work. So at the end of the day, 30 NFL football teams are all billionaires that own them, and every city in America would cut off their right arm to get the Browns or the Bengals, and we have to keep them. If you lose them, you ain't getting them back. Browns were lucky to get them back once when Modell left and took them to Baltimore. It ain't going to happen a third time. These things are economic drivers, and you have to have them. You can't lose them.
What an enthusiastic endorsement.
Go Browns. Maybe we'll get four wins next year.
I have a question about the politics of this. There was a kind of a legislative procedural thing that some members in the House, Republicans and Democrats, tried to team up. And I don't know that it would have actually tanked the House version of this, but they tried. And there's polling that says that 70% plus of people, when you ask them, do you want to fund this way? Do you think that we should be spending tax dollars on professional sports? They say no. So I don't think it's a guarantee that this is going to make it through. So I just at least wanted to put that out there. I'll be interested to see if it does.
You know, maybe it'll have this great benefit, but all these projects always get justified. It will build the economy, just like tax cuts will always build the economy. If you have an idea out there and you want to gain support, you say it's going to build the economy. You know, casinos will build the economy, and racinos will, and everything. So, I mean, again, it's wonderful to hear this enthusiasm, but I don't believe the notion that there are 30 cities in the country that would give their left arm to get the Cleveland Browns. They might want the Kansas City Chiefs.
Kansas City rejected public funding for that stadium. It wasn't even close, and they won the Super Bowl a few times.
I agree. Cities would give one arm to get the Browns, and then eventually they'd have to give the other arm to keep them from moving 25 years later. Our thanks to our expert panel, OSU political scientist Herb Asher, Republican strategist Mike Gonadakis, and State House reporter Andrew Tobias of Signal Statewide. All right, time now for our Snollygoster of the Week segment, where we honor the shrewdest politician or political move of the past week. This week, we give it to the ghost of Jim Rhodes. As President Trump ordered National Guard troops to deal with protesters in Los Angeles, Ohioans of a certain age immediately remembered Governor Jim Rhodes' decision to send National Guard troops to Kent State University in 1970. We all know how that ended. 4 protesters dead, 9 wounded, and a nation scarred. No doubt, the legacy of that decision will give Governor DeWine great pause before ordering troops to confront protesters here in Ohio. And we should say, the anti-ICE protest in Columbus this week was very peaceful. It was a bit loud at times, so that's okay, but it ended peacefully. In fact, a group of protesters even broke into a line dance at the end at Columbus City Hall. So there you go. That'll do it for this week's edition of Snollygoster, which is part of the NPR network. As always, please be sure to leave us a good review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts, and just tell your friends about us. For our student producer, Katie Genius, our digital producer, Michael DeBonis, and our audio engineer, Dalton Jones, I'm Mike Thompson for Snollygoster from WOSU Public Media.